Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, I think of it as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the most astute and accomplished and certainly vigorous contributors to the debate about that war for the free world, a conceptualizer as well as articulator of policy recommendations, is our guest in this segment. He is Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He currently serves as the Marine Corps University's Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory. He's also Breitbart News Network's National Security and Foreign Affairs Editor, a contributor of voluminous articles and commentaries and the like. His latest book is a contribution to Fighting the Ideological War, Winning Strategies from Communism to Islamism. Dr. Gorka, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, sir.
It's superb to be on the show, Frank. Thank you.
My pleasure. Listen, there's so much to talk about. Seb, one of the things that I think you do better than just about anybody is the proverbial connecting the dots. We're endlessly told if there's any problem at all, it is kind of a microcosmic problem, notably at the moment, the Islamic State. We're also told it has nothing to do with Islam, notably by the President of the United States. He has just propounded an authorization for the use of military force and a national security strategy that reflect, really, right, the remarkable blind spots. Help us connect the dots. What are we, in fact, up against? And does it, in fact, have anything to do with Islam?
Well, it's not just a question of connecting the dots. And I really like the phrase. I know you've had him on the show. Tom Joston of the Long War Journal talks about how the administration's counterterrorism policy is actually an effort in disconnecting or unconnecting the dots. It's more than that. It's also having a historic perspective on the enemies we face today and their threat doctrine of global jihad. So two big things, if I may, that really are the black holes of the current strategy. Number one, we have this kind of ADD obsession with the latest organization and the latest individual. So it's AQ, then it jumps to one of AQ's affiliates, then we look at ISIS, and we've gone from Bin Laden to Zawahiri to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And that's not the problem. It's much more, what is the commonality between these threat groups? And of course, whether it's Boko Haram or ISIS, whether it's Al-Qaeda or Al-Shabaab, the connective tissue everywhere is their doctrine of global jihad. So that should be the focus of our counterterrorism policy, not individuals and not organizations. Second, it has to be put into historic context. Where does this doctrine come from? What is the source of global jihadism? And you very rightly over the years have placed our focus on Sharia, on the sources of the understanding of jihad. But let's put it in the correct historic context. It didn't start on September the 11th, nor did it start with the first World Trade Center attack. This goes back for decades. It goes back to the founding of the Muslim Brotherhood in 1928. It goes to the siege of Mecca in 1979. It goes back to the first Afghan war against the Soviets. If you don't understand the precursors and how all these geopolitical events feed into the narrative of jihad, we will be very, very challenge in coming up with a response that provides safety and victory for America.
Seb, in that regard, one of the challenges that we confront, of course, is that we are told we can rely upon some of the nations that have been most aggressive in promoting some of this jihadism around the world as our allies, notably Qatar, Turkey, Saudi Arabia. You've recently written specifically on the Saudi business about their ties to 9/11 which is still largely unknown by, again, most Americans. Fill us in on that story.
Yes, at the moment, this is a news item again with a story about the 28 redacted pages of the original 9/11 Commission report and the allegation that they implicate the Saudi regime in terms of their connections to Al-Qaeda, which may or may not be the case. Let's not forget that bin Laden's father was a very, very close friend of the former king of Saudi Arabia. But the fact is, it goes much deeper than that. The connections of the Saudi regime to the global jihadi movement really go back to the founding of Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia was the result of a pact between the House of Saud and Ibn Wahhab, a very puritanical fundamentalist Islamic ideologue. So it goes back right to the beginning of the creation of the country. And second, as I mentioned, to the siege of Mecca in 1979, 500 young Muslim jihadis captured the holiest site in Islam. As one of the consequences of that attack, which went to the heart of who the king was supposed to be as the protector of the holy sites, a secret deal was made between the House of Saud and the clerics, the priests, if you will, that had endorsed the attack. And this is documented now in a wonderful book by Trofimov called The Siege of Mecca, whereby the Saudi regime said, jihadism must not be allowed to occur on Dar al-Islam, on Islamic soil, but the export of the ideology of jihad onto non-Muslim territory, onto Dar al-Harb, is not only permissible, it will be supported by his regime. So that explains a lot about the last 30 years, I think.
Yeah, and the fact that at various points, the Saudi government itself has been threatened by these jihadists, which has caused them to turn, in the case of that siege in Mecca, to the French and more often to us to protect them, shouldn't really be confused, should it, Seb Gorka, with this idea that they are really on our side, because that kind of support for jihadism, that kind of ideological fervor for, well, Wahhabism or Islamism or jihadism or Sharia, however you want to describe it, is still absolutely central, is it not, to the Saudi regime?
I would say that it's getting a little bit schizophrenic of late. It has been a part and parcel of their relationship to these threat groups. But after 05 and 06, after Al-Qaeda turned its guns against the Saudi security services and in fact tried to kill one of the princes, Saudi Arabia has been reevaluating its relationship. It hasn't fully come on board, but if you look at the overtures made to Israel by Saudi Arabia, which is very interesting, I think right now they are in a existential crisis in terms of, can they cut their ties? Do they really still believe in killing the infidel? Or is it the threat of ISIS coming to get them, which will force them to reassess their relationship to Washington, etc.?
Well, I noticed yesterday that they were putting out the word that they weren't so hostile to the Muslim Brotherhood after all, just some of its leaders. I take that as possibly a straw in this wind. Seb, let me turn quickly. You've got expertise in so many areas. And again, Seb Gorka is our guest. He is the Marine Corps University's Matthew Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory, also the editor of Breitbart News Network's National Security and Foreign Affairs coverage. Russia. We've had a deal struck with the Germans, the French, the Ukrainians, and Vladimir Putin. Are you making book on how long it'll last and whether it will actually make any material impact on Putin's aggressive behavior?
Well, I think it's already been broken. I think we've heard reports already of fighting occurring in the Ukraine. So I think it's lasted less than a few minutes, or the ink drying. But even if it had for a while, it's really a non-agreement. It's a non-ceasefire. Because Russia agreed to terms that it doesn't say actually exist on the ground. The removal of heavy weapons are the condition of the agreement. When Russia denies the existence of heavy weapons or having supplied heavy weapons to the pro-Kremlin forces, means, it's reality versus fantasy. This is something we see again and again and again in the Obama administration's response to these threats, and all the more often to the EU's response to the threat. So, no, this is another smoke screen. This is what in the good old days we would have called desinformatia or maskirovka. And as a KGB colonel, Vladimir Putin understands information warfare very well.
Seb Gorka, we have to let it go at that. I'm afraid there's so much more to talk about. I trust that you will be willing to come back and connect some further dots or reconstitute some of the ones that are being obscured at the moment with us. And thanks, as always, for the great work you do at the Marine Corps University and Breitbart News Network, most especially. Next up, we'll talk with Jim Henson, our boots-on-the-ground guy. We'll take stock of this AUMF of the president's, the alternative strategy offered at a defeat jihad summit this week by the Center for Security Policy. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states. One that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by our senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, Jim Henson, a man who has been in combat as a special operator in the United States Army, who brings the skill set of the special operator to the special forces in the War of Ideas at the center. Jim, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome.
Pleasure, Frank.
You were part of a very important program we conducted at the center this week, and I wanted to get your take on it and your thoughts. The purpose of it was to convene what we called a Defeat Jihad Summit with some of the country's best experts on the matter of jihad, what impels it, Sharia, and what to do about it. We had a number of eminences, some of whom were heard on this program last night. We had also a number of guests from elsewhere in the free world. What was your takeaway from this event, and what should the rest of us take away from it?
Frank, it was so refreshing to be in a room full of people who will actually call our Islamist enemy by their name, who will note out loud that their goal is jihad, and who have substantive answers to what we can do to win the war they're fighting against us. I mean, in comparison to the Obama administration's 6+ years of feckless leading from behind, it was, like I said, beyond refreshing. It actually gave me renewed hope. And we're going to take the fight, from where we were at the Reserve Officers Association across the street to Congress. Obama dropped his draft AUMF. We dropped a real plan, and it was wonderful.
And that plan, of course, is what we call the Secure Freedom Strategy, and we're going to talk more about that with Jim Hansen in a moment. But I think what you've said is an important juxtaposition. We not only had the authorization for the use of military force served up by the president as we were convening this Defeat Jihad Summit, but of course, next Wednesday, the president is going to be having his summit. He calls it the Countering Violent Extremism Summit, which, as you say, is a sort of stark contrast with the clarity that we were trying to bring to bear on this. Jim Hansen is our guest. He is a senior fellow these days at the Center for Security Policy, really a driving force behind its efforts to overcome the lack of clarity, the confusion, the disarray, the fecklessness of the Obama administration, and frankly, not much better coming out of Congress at the moment. And Jim, in that regard, I wanted to sort of get your sense of the initial response, at least, of Congress to this authorization for the use of military force. Do you sense that there really is an appetite there for a different approach, perhaps along the lines of our Secure Freedom Strategy?
I truly hope so, Frank. And I think what there has been thus far is no real approach, and no one has put a plan on the table that has as its goal winning this war, that has the name of our enemy clearly defined, and that goes about this as if we actually want to win. So I think that right there is a major change. And I don't see how, in comparison to Obama's AUMF, where he actually asked Congress to tie his hands as commander-in-chief in what he can do, and the hands of his successor, because his draft AUMF says no ground troops, period, and it extends into the next president's term. So he's really trying to make sure that there is no clear path. Now, I'm not advocating that we roll tanks into Iraq and Syria and go and occupy the country again. However, why would a president who wants to win say, take away some of my tools, don't let the military have all that it needs to at least have that on the table and let the enemy know that? It's akin to his announcing a withdrawal date in Afghanistan the same day he was announcing a surge there. He does not want to win, and I think you're right. Congress will take any plan that at least aims at winning and give it a good hearing, and we're going to make them listen.
Well, we hope so. The idea that we've advanced, as you know so well, Jim Hansen, and that you've described in a recent posting at the securefreedom.org website of your Free Fire Zone video commentaries, is our strategy, our Secure Freedom strategy, actually has as one option for Congress a draft declaration of war, not an authorization for the use of military force. Talk about why a broader declaration of war really makes sense under present circumstances, given this enemy and given the kind of challenge that we need to face straight ahead.
Well, Frank, we're fighting a global jihad movement. It's composed of the usual throat-cutting, black flag-flying terrorists, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, and all the rest of those guys, ISIS. but it's also got the element of the nonviolent, the pre-violent, the stealth jihadis, the Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, ISNA, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. These groups are sneaking in under the radar, claiming that anyone who says that Islam is a problem is an Islamophobic. And they're gaining a lot of traction. We need to include them as members of the global jihad movement and declare war on the entire bunch of them. That doesn't mean we're going to go ahead and, you know, drop a hellfire missile on some of the nonviolent jihadis, but we need to fight them with the same tools they're using against us. They're using our freedoms and lawfare and lobbying and all that kind of stuff to sneak their Sharia rules and other things into our systems. And we need to fight them with those tools, and we need to fight the violent jihadis with every bit of military force we can muster. And that's why a declaration of war is the right way to go about that, with all forces of the U.S. government, intelligence, economic, diplomatic, and even cultural forces, because this is a clash of cultures, to go ahead and state their ideology puts women in potato sacks, subjugates them, oppresses everyone, and we don't want that in our free society.
Yeah. You know, we were given a gift, I guess, in this regard, Jim, with a new poll that came out just yesterday, I believe, which indicates very strong concern on the part of American women. I think some 44% of those polled said they were concerned about Sharia being applied in this country. 33% of men responded that way as well. Those are very substantial numbers when you realize that I think most of us assume the public has no idea what Sharia is, let alone how terrifyingly awful the prospect of being subjected to it will be. I hope you're right, Jim, that the Congress proves open to this. We did have three members of the House, Stephen King and Mike Pompeo and Scott Perry, present for our discussions at the summit on Wednesday. We also had, of course, Senator Ted Cruz making a very, very strong statement about his concerns on the president's authorization for the use of military force, and I think clearly signaled an openness to a better strategic plan as well. So we've got people to work with, and we will be working with them at the Center for Security Policy. We appreciate so much your participation in that effort. Jim, let me in closing just ask you a question. As a man, again, we turn to you for the boots on the ground, common sense perspective on so much of this. But a principal deputy undersecretary of defense for policy by the name of Brian McKeon responded to the fact that a number of those who have been murdered by the Islamic State in these videos were wearing orange jumpsuits, which he said are symbols of the Gitmo or Guantanamo Bay detention facility, went on to say that, quote, "The greatest action the United States can take to fight terrorism is to close Gitmo," unquote. What do you think is the greatest action, and where does this fit into that pantheon?
This fits somewhere in the 100 to 150th on my list of things, and I wouldn't do it. We need a place to put people that we cannot try in civilian courts and should not try in civilian courts and who are sworn to our destruction. Gitmo works just fine for that. And the idea that this administration and someone working at the Defense Department is willing to go on record saying that's the best thing we can do, absolutely not. The best thing we can do, declare war on them in return for the war they declared on us decades ago.
And wage it as though our lives depend on it, for indeed they do. Jim Hansen, as always, thank you so much for joining us and for the great work you're doing at the Center for Security Policy. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, Bill Gertz takes us for a tour inside the ring. We'll talk about China and whether its growing military capability also has some weaknesses. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This week, Iranian proxies completed their takeover of the capital of one of the world's most strategically placed countries, Yemen. Our embassy there had to close, and its Marines had to surrender their weapons to jihadists. So much for what President Obama called his successful Yemen model for defeating the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Next week, we're told, he'll crow about the domestic equivalent of his successful Yemen model, the Muslim outreach program supposed to counter violent extremism in Boston, Minnesota's Twin Cities, and Los Angeles. But freedom fighter Charles Jacobs documented that the Muslim Brotherhood groups Team Obama has engaged in Boston have ties to at least a dozen known jihadists. Its outreach partners in Minnesota and L.A. are equally problematic. We can't afford any more of President Obama's successes. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. It's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined as we have the privilege of being each week by Bill Gertz, the man who takes us for deep dives inside the ring. That is, of course, the title of his prize-winning column at the Washington Times. He is also a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, a tremendous online resource. Bill is the author of myriad books on various issues affecting national security, including several on China. The latest is The Failure Factory, How Unelected Bureaucrats Are Undermining U.S. Security. Bill, welcome back. It's always good to have a chance to talk with you.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Well, you cover intensively, Bill, the issue of China, and particularly the developments that suggest its military capacity is becoming very formidable indeed. Some would argue surpassing our own in some respects. And yet you've written in your Inside the Ring column about a report that was done for the U.S.-China Economic and Security Commission that suggests that the Chinese have a whole host of problems with their military that may make them less formidable than some of us may think. What's your net assessment?
Yeah, this is an interesting story. It was a special report done for the China Commission by the RAND Corporation, and it looked at Chinese military weaknesses. My initial reaction was, oh, this is an effort to try and portray the PLA as a junkyard army and not worth worrying about. But after reading it, it made some valid points. And one of the points that it made, and a U.S. government official told me this, is that these weaknesses are important to learn because the Chinese tend to miscalculate. And this could be the basis for some miscalculation. If they believe that they are stronger than they are, there's this tendency, especially within the top military brass, to try and use the military, and that could lead to something that could be a shooting conflict, either over Taiwan or the East China Sea or the South China Sea. So I think it's instructive to look closely at some of the shortcomings in the military, and that's what the report did. It looked at their institutional weaknesses within the leadership, said that it's, a party army. It's not a national army. It's basically an arm of the Communist Party, and their main goal is to keep the party in power, and therefore this makes it more difficult from a morale standpoint to build a professional military. As far as weapon systems go, the PLA still is rather untrained and lacks the ability to integrate some of these more advanced weapon systems. Now, it did mention that their military buildup was impressive, but again, it was just for strategic reasons it was highlighting these weaknesses.
Do you think, Bill, that those are correctable problems, that as the Chinese professionalize their military, as they modernize it, as they bring additional resources to bear, that they're likely to sort these things out? Or are these simply insurmountable given the nature of the Chinese regime itself?
Well, no, it was, in fact, it was based on Chinese reports of the weaknesses and efforts to address those weaknesses, efforts to fix them. The bottom line was that it's going to be difficult for them to do that because of the way their system is structured. Basically, it's a communist-dominated system that doesn't trust the military outside of this tight party controls.
We will be following that closely. One of the areas in which there is no question the Chinese have demonstrated fairly formidable capabilities, Bill Gertz, is with respect to cyber warfare. Specifically, they are credited with having broken into and stolen, I believe, tens of millions of files of personal health-related information from the Anthem outfit, a major health insurer in the United States. What, from your perspective, Bill, does that suggest might now be available to the Chinese in terms of information, data, that could be exploited by them for intelligence purposes or perhaps others?
Yeah, I wrote about this on my Flash Critic cyber threat news site last weekend. Basically, the Anthem hack was traced to China by security analysts who noted that the domain from which these attacks occurred was one that was associated with a group called Deep Panda, which has been identified by security experts as a very sophisticated state-sponsored Chinese hacking organization. So that's the first thing. There is, of course, the people are hemming and hawing about whether it was really China or not, but it's clear that the indicators are that it was a Chinese attack. Stealing 80 million records focused on this Anthem, which is a health provider in key areas, for example, in California and New York, where there are a lot of national security and defense industrial facilities. So this is a way for the Chinese to get personal information on people who could be targets of intelligence recruitment or further cyber attacks down the road. So that seems to be the motivation at this point.
Bill, as this is happening, the United States government has announced that it's going to undergo yet another reorganization of its cyber warfare program. What do you make of the fact that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is now being entrusted with a new set of, institutional responsibilities in this regard?
Well, simply put, Frank, it's a bad idea. Lisa Monaco, who's the White House counterterrorism advisor, gave a speech this week where she discussed the creation of the Cyber Threat Intelligence Integration Center, what they're calling CITIC. And she was saying that there's a gap exists in their ability to share intelligence. This is really a mistake because the U.S. intelligence community already has a premier cyber threat intelligence and cyber attack agency, and that's the NSA. But this putting this new center under the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, reflects the bias on the part of the administration against NSA, against the military in general. So I think it's a bad idea. We already have, it's going to be another duplicative effort, which is usually creates more bureaucracy rather than creates government efficiencies.
Yeah, and additional layers of bureaucracy generally are counterproductive. productive as well, Bill, as you know so well from, among other things, your book on the subject of these bureaucrats. Talk a bit, if you would, Bill, in closing, about the confirmation by the United States Senate of Ashton Carter to be the next Secretary of Defense. What changes, if any, you think he's going to be able to make, especially in light of the administration, really, before he finished testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee, cutting him off at the knees?
Yeah, Ash Carter is going to have a very difficult challenge in taking the helm at the Pentagon right now. He's dealing with this the biggest budget crisis that the Pentagon has ever faced in sequestration, and I don't see any short-term solution to that. Although we hear a lot of pleas from both the executive branch and from the Congress about ending sequestration, nobody has really taken the steps to do that, and that's really leading to a budget crisis right now. So that's going to be his main challenge there. In addition to that, he's going to have to deal with a White House that seems hell-bent on concluding any deal whatsoever on Iran's nuclear program, and that to me is a real problem. I see that. I see no good coming out of a rush to a nuclear deal with Iran.
Bill, finally, you have a new initiative, which Ash Carter, among others, will be throwing himself into, I guess, on Capitol Hill, namely the president's draft authorization for the use of military force, both based on your expertise within the Pentagon and what you do in tracking developments on the Hill. Where do you think that's going to go?
Well, you know, I'm hopeful that cooler heads will prevail in at least shaping an authorization to recognize that the conventional military force solution for terrorism is not working. What we really need is a authorization on the use of information warfare and ideological warfare against Islamic terrorism. That's really what's needed, and until we start waging ideological war against this jihadist enemy, we're going to be stuck with endless war. The president said in his remarks that unless we do this right, we're going to be saddled with he opposes endless war, but yet by failing to wage ideological war, he is in fact crippling us with an endless war.
Yeah, condemning us to that fate, precisely. Bill Gertz, as always, we appreciate very much your visiting with us and sort of doing a wrap-up at the end of the week on all of these issues, which you cover so well at the Washington Free Beacon and at the Washington Times. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, we'll be talking with Cliff Kincaid. We'll get his assessment of the World Revolution Report, including what would seem to be an unlikely revolutionary in the Vatican. That and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Something unusual occurred in the aftermath of President Obama's State of the Union address when Washington Post columnist Glenn Kessler cited research from the Center for Security Policy in his Fact Checker column to fault the truthfulness of the president's statements about his efforts to halt the threat from Iran's nuclear program. Kessler cited a chart prepared by the center showing that Iran's enrichment of uranium has surged since 2009 and that Iran can now make at least 8 nuclear weapons from its enriched uranium stockpile. It is unheard of for the mainstream media to cite conservatives on arms control issues. The Post's decision to cite the Center's research reflects both the high quality of our work as well as growing concerns about the president's Iran policy. You can read our report issued last November, Why Congress Must Repudiate the Nuclear Talks with Iran, on the SecureFreedom.org website. I'm Fred Fleitz.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress. A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by an old friend and colleague, Cliff Kincaid, the president and founder of America's Survival, Inc. He is also the director for accuracy in media of its Center for Investigative Journalism. He is, to my way of thinking, one of the great investigative journalists of our time and has done exceptionally important work in ferreting out the evidence that exists of very dubious, well, thinking and associations in government, in the media, and in academia. It is always a pleasure to have him with us, and especially since he has just recently published an edition of World Revolution Report that, among other things, uncovers evidence of a very, well, problematic, to be sure, but also quite unlikely revolutionary
now holding the seat of the Holy See in the Vatican. Cliff, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you so much for this insight and the opportunity to talk with you about it.
Great to be with you, Frank.
So, give us the lowdown on what Pope Francis' background is and where he seems to be going in a Vatican that, as I understand it, is now really dominated by, of course, not only himself, but cardinals and others, very much of the liberation theology mold.
Francis came out of Argentina. He's a Jesuit. What he's been doing so far in his statements and actions have even led the Washington Post to comment that he's very different from John Paul II, who, of course, helped with Ronald Reagan to bring down the old Soviet Empire. It seems like, in this case, and I hate to say this, Frank, but as a Catholic myself, I have to be honest, it looks like Pope Francis is working with Obama to reconstitute the old Soviet Empire. We all know that he played a role in negotiating the normalization of relations with Cuba. As you alluded to, he's rehabilitating some of these liberation theologian priests. He's on board Obama's climate change bandwagon. He's for amnesty. And now John Boehner has invited him to speak to Congress on September 24th. And I'm sure we're going to get a bunch of this socialist nonsense from him, sounding much like Obama about inequities, global redistribution of wealth. This is the Pope, and he has led some traditional Catholics like myself to conclude that despite his denials, he does have a Marxist philosophy.
How is that being manifested in terms of the teachings of the Church at the moment, Cliff, as well as some of the sort of strategic activities that he's using his, well, bully pulpit, I guess you could call it, to promote internationally?
Well, of course, as we see it, the moral teachings of the Church on matters of human life are the only teachings that are really, truly sacred. When the Pope spouts off on climate change and Cuba and global redistribution and this and that, political and economic and social matters, those are his opinions. But even though they are not holy in any real sense, they carry weight politically. And so when the Pope comes over here and speaks to Congress, when he entertains Vladimir Putin in the Vatican, when he negotiates a deal with Obama, with Castro, these things carry great weight because, as you pointed out, Frank, the Holy See, in effect, is a country. It qualifies as a head of, he qualifies as a head of state, and he has global power and influence in part because of that, but also in part because there's over a billion Catholics in the world today.
Stalin, I think, famously said, how many divisions does the Pope have? And, of course, the answer is none, but he does have influence. There's no question about it, and particularly when he's using that influence in a very leftist, if not downright Marxist direction. It might have gladdened Joseph Stalin's heart, but I think it ought to be of cause of concern to the rest of us. Cliff, talk a little bit about the Pope and Islam. He is, of course, presiding at the moment when jihadists of various stripes are tearing into and tearing apart what's left of Christian communities in the Middle East, in Nigeria, and elsewhere. What is his role in trying to bring to bear the moral suasion or other power of his office to try to prevent that from happening? Or is he not?
We haven't seen that kind of action so far. In fact, to the contrary, we've seen Pope Francis promoting cooperation not only with global Islam, but with the Russian Orthodox Church, which, as we know, has long been dominated by the old KGB. Many of us are very disturbed by the fact that recently Francis went into the Blue Mosque in Istanbul, Turkey, and prayed with the Islamic Grand Mufti. He's referred to Islam as a religion of peace. He thought Charlie Hebdo went a little too far. These are the kinds of statements that we don't need. We need the Pope to really speak out for the persecuted peoples in the Middle East, especially Jews and Christians.
this same kind of embrace of our enemies, endorsement of their values, and promotion of their ideology, whether it's Sharia or whether it's communism or something else, socialism, is being simultaneously amplified, of course, in arguably that most secular of entities, Hollywood. You're going to have a news conference on the subject of America's enemies in Hollywood, then and now, on the 24th of February. Cliff Kincaid, talk a little bit about what you expect to unveil there, if you can give us a sneak preview, shall we say.
Well, sure. My old friend and former editor at Human Events newspaper, Alan Riskin, has written a great book called Hollywood Traitors, on how the communists infiltrated Hollywood in the 30s and 40s. Alan knows what he's talking about. His father was Maury Riskin, the former screenwriter who wrote some of the Marx Brothers movies. Alan's a good old hardcore anti-communist from way back. And he has documented that all of the members of the so-called Hollywood 10 who were blacklisted were, in fact, hardcore Stalinist communists. Not only that, but many of them were, in fact, apologists for Hitler and his blitzkrieg when, of course, Hitler had made common cause with Stalin. So we're going to really unveil officially in D.C. Alan's book. It's just out. Plus, my old friend Trevor Loudon's going to talk about how, and Alan talks about this in his book, how the old House Committee on Un-American Activities, that later became the House Internal Security Committee, played a key role in uncovering these subversive networks and how we need a committee like that back. Plus, Deborah Weiss, an expert on radical Islam, is going to talk about how the Council on American-Islamic Relations has been manipulating Hollywood films in order to keep out any negative references to global Islam.
You know, Cliff, I'm reminded as you're speaking of my old boss, Ronald Reagan, and the moment when he very publicly broke with some on the left in Hollywood. He was a Democrat at that time, the president of the Screen Actors Guild, and I believe it was his testimony before that very House committee you've just referred to that helped expose what he was witnessing inside of his industry and among his colleagues. It resulted in death threats against him and launched him on a lifelong advocacy of conservatism against this kind of doctrine, and ultimately helped him take down the Soviet Union. The strategy codified in his National Security Decision Directive 75 ultimately resulted in the defeat of the Soviet Union. We think it's a good model for what the West ought to be doing right now. Cliff Kincaid with Accuracy in Media and American Survival, Inc., thank you so much for the great and very creative work you do. It is indispensable. I wish you well for your news conference on the 24th. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.